Nothing is so fleeting as sporting achievement, and nothing so lasting as the recollection of it.
This is the Couch Talk Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Couch Talk Podcast. I am your host, Subhash Jayaraman. As you all probably know, the greatest fast bowler of this generation and amongst the very best to have ever picked up a cricket ball, Dale Steyn, he announced his retirement from Test cricket recently. You know, when a player of his stature retires, it's very common to hear from them on the reasons and their experiences, but it is not so common to hear from the people that provided the support system for that player to learn the game, grow, and become a successful star. And so, it is my pleasure to welcome to the podcast Mr. Shark Steyn, the father of the great Dale Steyn. Welcome to the show, Shark.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here and to share some of my early thoughts on Dale.
It would be an absolute pleasure for me and all the listeners to have a window into that world of Dale through the eyes of a very proud parent. So, how was Dale as a young boy? You know, was he into other sports? You know, we saw him as a professional cricketer as extremely competitive person, but how was he as a young boy?
You know, Dale was his first few years of schooling, I'd say the first 2 years, he was not a very healthy child. He was sort of in and out of hospital. He battled with allergies and that kind of stuff. And as he sort of grew older, we noticed that he had this, he had a fine instinct to handle balls and play with balls and kick balls and catch balls and that kind of stuff. And he got a little bit older in his primary school. They introduced something at the school called Baker's Mini Cricket, which all the fathers got together, and we used to take all the youngsters, all the kids on a Saturday morning, and we used to play this mini cricket on the field. You know, you had all these little teams playing all over the field.
Yeah.
And one of the guys who was an instructor, he came to me and he said, "Listen, you got to watch that son of yours." He said he's got an instinct for playing with a ball. He's got a perfect eye for a ball. And from there, we noticed that, Dale became very athletic. He loved running. He loved playing in water and particularly playing with a ball. That's when it sort of really sort of sparked off that Dale was going to be a sportsman of some kind, you know.
You said about the mini cricket. So, you know, it's fun as a child in primary school. At what point did you see Dale actually moving, gravitating towards cricket?
Well, we originally, my first wife and I, Dale's mom and I, we come from Zimbabwe, or Rhodesia, Zimbabwe, and went on a bit of a holiday back to Zimbabwe to visit my brother. Now, Dale's cousins are a little bit older than what he was at that stage. I think he was about 8 or 9. And we went and visited, and his cousins were involved with the Zimbabwe cricket team. So they took Dale along with them one day, and he went with them, and he watched them practice, and he met all the Zimbabwe cricketers and that. And from there, his interest and his love for cricket sort of blossomed. It started blooming. It started growing. And then he started playing cricket for the school. And from the age of about 10, 11, we started encouraging him, and he started getting involved in, school provincial cricket and that kind of thing. And it grew from there. And in the area around here, he became known for his bowling at that early age of 9, 10, and 11, under 11s, he was swinging the ball that even headmasters of the school sort of noticed that this kid had a gift for swinging a cricket ball. And it's really started growing from there.
I mean, you come from the northeastern part of South Africa. If I pronounce it incorrectly, please forgive me. Falaborwa, which is near the Kruger National Park. Am I right?
That's correct. We bought a right on the park, and one of the main gates into the Kruger Park is at Phalaborwa. So from my house to the park gate is about 1.5 kilometers.
In South Africa, school cricket system, you know, it depended on what school you went to, that kind of allowed you to progress through the ranks easily. You know, I've heard of schools in Pretoria and in Cape Town, etc., where, you know, a lot of the test players came from. So how was it for Dale? You know, you said around 11, you were still around here, Kruger. So what was his progress from there on?
Well, there's a little bit of a story, a little bit of history attached to that actually became a, could I say, a national cricketer for South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Once he finished primary school, he went into high school, and there was two things that Dale's heart was really set on. One thing was skateboarding,
mm-hmm.
pardon me, and the other was cricket.
Yeah.
So during the week at school, it was cricket. And then he came home on the weekends, it was skateboarding. And then, of course, he got involved with what we call the country cricket here, you know, the local cricket teams, where the guys invited him to come and play for the local cricket teams here, and which he did at a very young age. He was playing with the grown-ups on the cricket field, and they loved it because he was good. And there were a couple of them, him and a few of his friends, that were actually playing for the men's team around this area. So then, you know, I didn't force him, but eventually he had to sort of make a choice. It was either cricket or skateboarding.
Hmm.
Now at school he was sort of an all rounder. Dale was a sportsman. He never ever got involved in, you know, alcohol and parties and cigarettes and smoking and that kind of thing. It just wasn't part of his way of life. He was so much into the sport and running around the house and timing himself and, you know, that kind of thing. So eventually he made the choice that the cricket was the way he had to go. Although it was so close that he actually wanted to be a professional skateboarder.
Hmm.
But in South Africa, skateboarding wasn't really, I mean, if he went to America or something like, I'm sure he would have been a professional skateboarder.
I mean, I think the entire world of cricket is very, very thankful that Dale chose to stay in South Africa and not travel somewhere else and pick up skateboarding. You know, as he progresses, you know, every parent, as they see that, identify the talent in their kids, and other people tell him like, hey, your kid has got this great gift, you know, he's got to do something about it. There is pressure on you as a parent that the child gets all the support, and that, you know, what the whole world thinks is the promised things, gifted things come to fruition. So what sort of pressure did that put on you as a parent?
I have to give a lot of credit to his grandmother, on his mom's side of the family. She supported him, and at that stage, I was actually a greenkeeper on the golf course here in Phalaborwa. So I was involved, you know, with the greenkeeping, and a lot of the golfers and businessmen that used to come and play golf, they knew me, and they knew Dale as well.
Hmm.
So these guys used to give us sponsorships, you know, in the way of buying equipment. And guys used to, you know, buy him a cricket bat, or if he proved himself over a period of time, one of the guys would say, listen, come to the shops, we'll go and buy him a pair of bowling shoes or some pads, or you know, these guys would always assist us with a little sponsorship here and there. But we had no major sponsorships as some of the guys get in the bigger cities and that, you know, because it was a very small town. It was, you know, a very family orientated mining town.
Mm-hmm.
So we that's how we managed to get him through the early years of his cricket career. We didn't go on holidays and that kind of thing. All our holidays and leave were traveling for cricket, provincial trials and trials for this and trials for that. And it all came out of our own pockets. You know, myself, I used to take my leave pay and big steal and borrow, and the guys used to donate a few bucks here and there. Mm-hmm. And this is how we got Dale through his early years of his cricketing career, yeah.
And I read somewhere recently that, you know, he really took cricket seriously when he moved to Pretoria. And was that when he was sent out to the boarding school?
That's correct. What actually happened was when he left, when he matriculated and finished senior school or high school, as we call it here, mm-hmm. we put him into a cricket academy in the same town where his school was. They had a cricket academy there. And he was in this academy for about a year. And he was doing okay. And then somebody came and said, listen, one of the local clubs in Pretoria, cricket clubs, were looking for a bowler for their team. And somebody suggested that Dale Steyn would be somebody to look at. So one Sunday, I took him up to Pretoria, and he played a game for this team in Pretoria. It's an Afrikaans name. It was called Eerste Rus, which means first rest. Hmm. And he played a game for these guys. Now, Dale was 19. And he played a game for these guys, and he literally bowled the whole opposition out. You know, it was amazing. These guys were so impressed with him that when the game finished, they literally carried him off the field on their shoulders. And they immediately signed him up for their team there in Phalaborwa, at least in Pretoria. Mm. So their coach was involved with the Titans, which was a provincial team in Pretoria. And he came to me and he said he would love to put Dale in the academy at the Titans. I said to him, you know, it's going to cost a lot of money. He says, don't worry about the money. With Dale's talent, they will find money, but they want him in that Titans academy. Hmm. So off he went. The team he was playing for, they released him to go to this academy at the Titans. And he was there for a year, and he did so well that the actual Titans invited him to play a game for them. Now, when he played the initial game for them, I was invited to go and watch.
Yeah.
And he was playing against the likes of Graham Smith and Mark Boucher, and, you know, they were all stars at that stage. And Dale was nothing. I mean, he wasn't even a provincial player.
Yeah.
And he played so well that Sunday afternoon, they signed him up to play permanently for the Titans. And that is how he got into provincial cricket in South Africa. So he literally got in through the back door. He didn't go the same route as the wealthy kids. Remember, we weren't wealthy people. We were normal middle-class people in South Africa. Mm. And Dale was so lucky, and he got in that door, literally got through the back door into national cricket. Once he was in the Titans, from there it was plain sailing. They groomed him, and Dale just became their man.
And you're being polite, I suppose, in saying that he got in through the back door, because it seems like he blew the door down with his skill and ability. And as a parent at this time, you know, as you can see, your son's ability is being noticed by more and more and being appreciated that he is destined for greater things. What are your feelings at this point of what could this boy achieve?
Well, you know what, it's something that it's difficult to explain. I mean, you as a parent, you do all you can for your children. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's the way parents are. Well, you know, most parents. I mean, you will bend over backwards to give your children the opportunity to do anything. I mean, to see him actually achieve, that tells me as a parent that I must have done something right in Dale's life to get him, for him to be able to get where he is today.
Then he gets into Titan Academy, and then he starts playing first-class matches, and he only played just a handful, I think six or seven
before the national call-up comes up in 2004. And now he's representative of the South African national team. You know, I'm sure like every kid that plays cricket in any corner of the world wants to represent their national team. And here you are, you know, Dale is already there. He's made that rapid rise. At this point, you know, the national pride of it also comes along with it. So were there any discussions between, you know, you, the family and Dale on, you know, this rapid rise of a young man?
You know, when he got the call up, we weren't really expecting anything like that at that stage of the game. I mean, you know, he was still so fresh. And then he phoned us and he said, you're not going to do this. He says, I've been called up to play for South Africa. Now, Pretoria from Phalaborwa is a six-hour drive.
Yeah.
And his first international game, they were going to be playing in Port Elizabeth.
Yes.
So, I mean, my wife at that stage, Dale's mom and I, we just didn't have that kind of money to go all the way to Port Elizabeth. So we were all geared up to watch his first match on TV.
Hmm.
Then a very good friend of ours, yeah, in Phalaborwa, he said to me, a news spread all over town. Yeah, I tell you, I was getting emails and phone calls of, you know, congratulating us and that, because it's such a close-knit community here.
Mm-hmm.
And this friend of he said to me, you guys going to go and watch Dale, you know, play in Port Elizabeth? I said, no, we can't afford that. We're going to sit in the lounge and we're going to watch it on TV. And this guy said, over my dead body. Within an hour, we had tickets and hotel accommodation and everything. And this guy promptly organized the whole thing for us. And we were flown up to Port Elizabeth to go and witness Dale's debut in Port Elizabeth. And I tell you, it was so emotional when we got to Port Elizabeth and we met up with Dale. And, of course, we met most of the team. You know, I mean, he has this little guy. He's still got a little path in his hair. And he's standing with all these superstars. We were all brought to tears. I mean, myself, Dale's mom, and his grandparents flew with us as well. It was so emotional. We stood at the hotel, and they took pictures of us with him and that kind of stuff. But the tears were flowing. This was just something. It was history in the making.
Yeah.
And little did we know, you know, that he would become known all over the world.
Mm.
And it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
From all the cricket that I've ever seen of Dale, and obviously you've seen a lot more, he is one of the most fierce competitors on a cricket field. At the same time, once outside the boundary, he's like, based on all the reports that I've heard, he's one of the nicest guys. How did he balance this need for competition and also being a normal guy?
You know what? I think it was basically the way that Dale was brought up. I mean, you know, he's always been a humble kid. He was never a problem child at home. You know, he was always well disciplined. He behaved himself. And he's actually a real softy. You know, he's got a soft heart, and it's very easy to actually hurt his feelings, you know.
Hmm.
And I think that's basically what kept him so humble. And he's very much like his mother when it comes to, you know, animals and people. And, you know, he's got this thing for sort of underprivileged people and animals that are suffering. And, you know, between you and I and everybody that's going to be listening to this, Dale is actually a softie. And he loves people. He really does. But like you say, he was taught, you know, when you're playing the game, you're playing for your franchise or you're playing for your team or you're playing for your country, and you put your heart and soul into it. And that's what he does. He puts his heart and soul into everything he does. And when he comes off the field, the things he does, the good things that he does, also he puts his heart and soul into that as well. And I think that's what makes him so humble. That's what... You know, he's not one of these guys that turns his back on children or or you know, if he sees a stray dog in the street, he will come out and pet the animal, you know, and feed it or something like that. That's Dale. That's the way he is. If he comes home, he avoids the limelight. He'll come home, he'll grab a couple of his friends that he knows, his close friends. They'll grab a couple of fishing rods and they'll disappear into the bush. And that's him. He's happy. He's got his friends. And, you know, he'll come home again and he doesn't go and look for the limelight. He likes to be just a normal person.
What sort of relationship did you guys have as father and son as he, you know, after he makes his South Africa debut and he's becoming more and more globally known, what sort of relationship did you guys maintain?
Well, you know, when he comes and visits, we normally sit and chat or, you know, go out for dinner or something like that. But he's got so many friends here in Phalabora that his time, you know, and his time is limited. He doesn't get that much time off. And Phalabora being so far and from Cape Town, I mean, Dale lives in Cape Town.
Yeah.
So when he does come to Phalabora, he's normally here for about 3 or 4 days. And then he's got to share his 3 days or his 4 days amongst his friends and his family and whoever, you know, he wants to see. And so it's basically, when he comes to Phalabora, it's like a fleeting, how's it, Dad? How are you doing? Pops in and maybe has a cool drink. We sit and have a chat and then he's off again and he's got the fishing rods and he's off again. Then he's back again. And then they go into the game park to go and see, you know, go and look at animals. And he loves his photography as well. One of his best friends is a well-known photographer. And he'll organize a night in the game park. And so even when he visits, he is so busy. It's unbelievable. So I don't put pressure. As long as I see him and I can give him a hug and a quick chat, I'm happy with it. You know what I mean?
Did you guys talk on the phone much at all?
Oh, yeah. No, we stay in contact on the phone. And he drops him a message every now and again. He says, hey, old man, how's it going? Yeah, we chat. The other day, a little while back, I was talking to him and I said to him, you know what, with all the money that you earn and, you know, you've got to think about what I did for you in your life, you know, what it cost me to get you where you are today. And, you know, I said to him, shouldn't we start thinking about, you know, a little bit of payback time? And he kept quiet and then he said to me, but Dad, he said, isn't that what dads are supposed to do for their kids? So I had no answer to that. I mean, isn't that what dads are supposed to do for their children? You bring them up and you give them your best. Yeah, but I must say that, you know, he has spoiled me in a way. You know, he's always giving me stumps that he's collected. I've got a collection of cricket stumps. He's given me a bat that he used and it's been signed by all the guys. You know, everywhere he goes and plays, he gets a cap or a T-shirt or something, and he gives it to me. And I've got a room here at home where I've got all my caps and my cricket stumps and my cricket balls and bats and shirts and all sorts of stuff that, you know, that Dale has given me through the years. And he also, believe it or not, he also bought me a Harley Davidson.
Nice.
Yes. So, you know, in a way, he has spoiled me, so I can't really complain about that.
As his career starts taking off, you know, there are some early setbacks with hamstring injuries. And then later on in his career, obviously, towards the end, also he had some injuries. Because you go away from the limelight, you know, he goes away from the limelight. Only the people closest to him really know what he's going through in terms of treatment and rehab and emotionally how he's going through. So how was Dale through those setbacks in his career?
I think because of his activity and because he is so active and, you know, he's a fitness fanatic and that, the shoulder injury that he had, it really set him back. Because, you know, even like I said, in his free time, he's always either on a skateboard or a surfboard or on a bicycle or running or walking his dogs or running them up the mountains and that. I think that shoulder injury sort of brought a dark cloud on him. And you know, he would phone me now and again, and I could hear his voice the way he was talking, that it was hurting him, you know. But I think, you know, that kind of hurt and that kind of pain that he was going through at that stage, he kept it very much to himself, you know, and he didn't really even share it with the family. Although I know when I spoke to him about it on the phone, he was trying to explain to me, you know, what's happening and why it's broken and the rest of it like that. But you could hear that Dale was down because he wanted to get onto that field and he knew he couldn't. And it brought him down. It did really. It brought him down. But to the public, he kept his head up high and he just told everybody he's going to get fit and he's going to get well. And I have to give him his due. He put his mind to it and he pushed it. So given, you know, given his age and what he's done and what he's been through, I as a father, I've got to compliment him on the way he managed and handled that major injury. I mean, I think it was almost 2 years that he couldn't play cricket and it was hurting him. He's got a strong mind. So he managed it very well.
Along those lines, I want to, you know, learn about how he handled the success on the field as well as the failures on the field. You know, as a, you know, you win as a team, you lose as a team. True. You know, but sometimes you take it personal.
I think Dale, one thing about Dale was his whole life. If he achieved stuff, he never liked to brag about it. He never liked us to make a big deal about big achievements and that kind of thing. He sort of just, he would take it in his stride and say, oh, well, you know, it's good, but, you know, he's going to try and do better. I mean, he used to run around the house and he used to time himself. And I used to, that as a kid, and then I used to say, oh, but that's good. He says, oh, but tomorrow I'm going to do it quicker. Mm-hmm. And the next day I'm going to do it quicker. You know, I think in that way, he handled his successes very humbly. He didn't like bragging. That's one thing about Dale. He did not like to brag. And he didn't like me to brag on his account. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like it. And even today, he still doesn't like it. If I, you know, brag on his account, he says it's not right. He says it's not a good thing to do. It's private. He likes to keep that private.
Okay.
And on the failure side,
mm-hmm.
He used to think it, and he would take it pretty hard. But he would always try and keep a good face or try and sort of not play it down, but say, well, you know, we all make mistakes, we all come short, but we get up and we go and we keep going. And I think that's his outlook is, you know, you can't be perfect all the time.
Correct.
You're going to slip up somewhere along in your life. And it's no good just laying down and dying. He would say, well, we made a mistake, or we came short, but let's go and give it a bash. Let's put it behind us and keep going. We got to... And especially in the position that he is, where, you know, the whole of South Africa looks at him, he says, Dad, I've got to keep my people happy.
Mm.
You know, I've got to keep the kids happy. And I've got to, if I make a mistake, I'm going to try and explain to the kids, this is what I did that went wrong. And so that, you know, the kids can see him and say, well, we mustn't do that and make the same mistake as what Dale did. You know, he would try and set an example all the time.
Mm.
And I think he would, you know, he was very mature about those things. But I do know that the failures, you know, in the cricket field where they had losses and, you know, World Cups that they didn't make. Even this last one where he went to and he didn't even get to play a game.
Yeah.
He was really sad. He was really sad that he couldn't do it. He said, and he feels he's let his country down. So I said, you know, it's one of those things. It happens. And it's past. I mean, you're not going to change it now. What's done is done.
Yeah.
So, you know, forget it. And that's what he does. He rather look forward than cry about the past.
You talked about how you and Dale's mom and his grandparents flew down to Port Elizabeth to see his debut. Have you seen him play for South Africa in the flesh more than that? considering where you live and how hard it is to get to the main cricketing centers within South Africa. Have you seen much of him playing cricket, you know, from the stadium itself?
Yes, you know, we managed to watch a couple of games in Pretoria. He's flown us up a couple of times to Cape Town. I watched him playing India. I watched him playing New Zealand in Johannesburg. And of course, we watched his debut, taking Michael Vaughan, his very, very first wicket in international cricket. It's something that will go to the grave with me, you know what I'm saying? It is one of the ultimate things. There's three things in Dale's career that will never leave my mind. The first thing was taking his first wicket in international cricket with Michael Vaughan.
Yeah.
The second thing was that really worried me was when he was playing against New Zealand, he bowled a guy called Craig Cummings.
Yeah.
And the ball went up and went through Craig Cummings' visor on his helmet, and it smashed into his cheek.
Yes.
Of course, I think he literally ended that man's cricketing career because the ball smashed his face. The guy had to have surgery. He was, you know, they had to fly him out the country back to New Zealand. I mean, and that was one of the sad things, you know, because as a fast bowler, you don't want to hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, your aggressiveness on the field has to be there. But I know Dale, he wouldn't intentionally go out to hurt somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, he did. He put that man down on the pitch, and the blood was flowing on the pitch. It's something that I'll never forget. And then the third thing that will go to my grave is the day he flew my wife and I now, his stepmom, he flew us to Perth to go and watch him play, because my brother lives in Perth as well, so we stayed there, and we went to watch him play, and to watch him come down on the pitch with a broken shoulder was devastating. It was, you know, it was just something that it'll stay with me for the rest of my life, to see him come off that pitch holding his arm like he did. And I knew the night before I asked him, how is your shoulder? Because he had a bit of a niggle on the shoulder.
Yes.
And he said, you know, Dad, it's good. He says, I'm ready for it. And then of course he went and he bowled that ball. I think that ball went through 150 or something like that. I know in my mind, probably was the sign that his career was now sort of on the downward trend.
Gotcha. You know, he made his name in Test cricket in what a phenomenal bowler he was. So the day he announced that he's walking away from Test cricket is, you know, obviously, you know, a sad day for him and everybody around him, like you, obviously. But it's also a sad day for a lot of the world cricket fans. But before he made that decision, did he talk to his support system, support group, the family, that he was thinking of walking away from Test cricket?
Yes. I believe there was a lot of discussions with him, with his agent, with his teammates. And he did phone me the night before just to warn me that I must just prepare myself, because he said that the bomb is going to drop. It was solely his decision. You know, I'd have hated to talk him out of it. And then he goes and he tries to play a test match and he fails. You know, then he's failing himself. He's failing his family and he's failing the nation. And that's not... So I didn't try and talk him out of it. What I did say to him was that he's had such a good run. And I mean, basically he's been playing cricket for the Proteas for almost 16 years.
Yes.
Not many international players or even South African players can say that they've played for their national team for 16 years. I mean, that's just phenomenal. As a fast bowler.
Finally, you know, when you look back from the mini cricket to academies and, you know, you're scrambling around money to support his training and gear and all that, to him becoming an international superstar, and then now retiring from, you know, the most challenging format of the game that defines Dale Steyn's legacy in the sport, How do you see all of that as a parent?
You know what? I think I could sit and actually write a book. You know, sitting here talking to you, thinking all those, putting all those thoughts in line. You know, I can picture him now as a little shorty, blonde hair, mm-hmm. two bricks in a bucket high. And I can picture him still in his white shorts all the way through in his blues with the Titans into the greens with the international squad, you know, right up to where he is now. It's like a storybook at my age. I can see the beginning and I've followed and I've read this book right through basically now, and I'm getting to the end of the book with Dale. I hope one day that he sits and he writes a story, because I think Dale can tell a lot of stories of, you know, not the things that everybody knows, but the things that he knows, the private things that he might be able to bring out and share with people. And yeah, it's a storybook, and it's a storybook I would love to write, to read, and to share. Yeah, no, it's lovely.
On that note, Shark, thank you so much for being on the show, and I wish you and your family, including Dale, obviously, all the very best.
It was my pleasure and honor to actually share some of this information with Dale. He probably won't be too pleased because I've shared some of the family secrets, but, you know, he's at that age where he understands, and I think it's good. It's good for people to know the real Dale face. Yeah. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.